Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
So what if one of the most common causes of female infertility has been misunderstood for decades? Millions of women have been told they have PCOS. They've been prescribed medications, put on birth control, told to lose weight, and left feeling frustrated, confused, and often hopeless. But now, experts around the world are changing even the name of the condition. So the question is, have we been treating the wrong problem all along? So today we're diving into a topic that affects millions of women worldwide and yet remains one of the most misunderstood conditions in reproductive medicine. You may know it as PCOS, which is polycystic ovary syndrome. But recently, an international panel of experts announced a new name, PMOS, or polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome. So why does that matter? Because sometimes changing the name changes how we understand the problem. Joining us today is a very special guest. He's one of the world's leading fertility pioneers, Dr. Sherman Salber. And throughout his career, he's challenged conventional thinking in reproductive medicine and helped countless patients navigate infertility when others told them there was no answers. And today we're unpacking the myths, the misunderstandings, and what every woman needs to know about fertility, hormones, and hope. So Dr. Salber, it's so good to see you again. It's Friday. You're always busy. Do you have anything exciting going on this weekend?
Well, I'm always loving talking about this. Let me explain about the PCOS, PMOS thing. You know, so many doctors, there have been so many papers, thousands every year, written about PCOS, demonstrating the confusion that so many clinicians have about it. But the science of it is very, very simple. Now, when they decided to change the name, they just added to the confusion. They did not simplify it. They did not clarify it. It's ironic. It's the opposite. So the simple thing about PMOS, it's caused by women being born with too many eggs. And if they have too many eggs, it sounds good because these women are all going to have a later menopause. But when you're younger, having that enormous number of eggs suppresses the pituitary gland. So it doesn't secrete FSH and LH when you have your period. And so you never recruit a dominant follicle. Now, when that happens, you don't really ovulate, or you ovulate late or irregularly in the cycle, and your periods become irregular. Not always. Your periods don't have to become irregular, but it's very common for that to be the case. More importantly, you wind up, because of the lack of ovulation, with an estrogen-dominant cycle without progesterone or with very little progesterone. This leads to the metabolic changes that cause the woman to make more male hormone, more testosterone, to have a greater appetite and to become overweight and obese. And when you become overweight and obese, you develop insulin resistance and you develop type 2 diabetes. All of these so-called endocrine things occur because of one common beginning. And that beginning is too many eggs, which you see on ultrasound as too many cysts, little tiny follicle cysts. They have eggs in them and they never get ovulated. And you're just born with too many eggs and you have a very high AMH level. And that is the simple cause of it. So we should still call it PCOS and understand what it really is. It's not a mysterious polyendocrine kind of confusing syndrome. It's a very, very, very simple. The science of this has been clear. Dr. Sittery at Wash University back in the 60s actually first described this. We know the science of the metabolism of how PCOS and failure of ovulation can lead to elevated testosterone levels, and vice versa. Dr. Steinberger in Texas showed how elevated testosterone levels, it's a vicious cycle, can lead to lack of ovulation. We've known this for decades in the
Right.
scientific world, but these clinicians are stupid about it, and it hurts the clinical practice, actually.
Why was the change even necessary then?
Well, I think a bunch of people that don't really understand PCOS and are puzzled by the confusion that you see in the literature every year. There's 1,000 different confused, messed up articles about it by people that haven't really done the proper science, and so they wanted to somehow or other describe it better because they didn't understand it, and so changing that name to polyendocrine metabolic disorder of the ovary doesn't. It doesn't clarify anything. And I can clarify you based on knowing the cause of PCOS. I can talk to you about the treatment, which is simple, effective, and it's probably the easiest infertility problem to cure.
Well, that's good news because our listeners are dying to know how to fix it because so many women are going through it. And what do you want women to know who've been told they have PCOS? What do you want them to understand?
Well, okay, first place, it's hard to just get pregnant by stimulating them to ovulate because we all know they'll have a flare-up of huge number of follicles. They'll ovulate many follicles, and then you could have a dangerous multiple pregnancy and wind up in the newspaper. So it's
Right.
very, very hard to treat without IVF. But with mini IVF, which we've talked about before, we can stimulate them mildly. Not have PCOS, hyperstimulation syndrome, and we can trigger with Lupron rather than HCG, and I guarantee you no one then will get hyperstimulation syndrome. We retrieve the eggs, fertilize them. No one's going to get a multiple pregnancy because we freeze those embryos, and we don't want them to get pregnant at the moment of the stimulation. Because the ovaries will be big and they can still get hyperstimulation syndrome from the pregnancy, because the pregnancy will make HCG and that will aggravate all these follicles and make them have this dangerous hyperstimulation syndrome. So, what you want to do is retrieve a few eggs, fertilize them, freeze the embryos, and transfer the embryos to the patient 3 months later. And this really works. And I will tell you this. It's not just a good idea if you don't want to get pregnant to be having irregular cycles in PCOS, because it does cause you to have an elevated testosterone level. It does cause you to be hungry and to become more obese. It does cause the uterine lining to be estrogen dominant, so it becomes thicker and has a higher incidence of cancer in your 60s of the uterus. All those are complications of PCOS simply because you have too many eggs. So when you're not trying to get pregnant, go on cyclic birth control pills, simple as that. And that will prevent this whole metabolic disorder from occurring. And when you are trying to get pregnant, do mini IVF, and it's that simple.
You're right. So many terms confuse everything, and it really doesn't have to be that confusing. I love how you simplified that for us so that we understand the simplified version, and that it sounds so much more problematic than what it is. Why do you think it's one of the most misunderstood diagnoses in women's health?
That's a great, great question. It's so misunderstood because when you see a patient, she's already obese and she's got insulin resistance, you might want to try to treat her with metformin or something that you treat a diabetic with because she's developing secondary diabetes. But her diabetes isn't the problem. It's just a secondary problem from the PCOS. And if you treat the PCOS, this insulin resistance and the diabetes will melt away. The acne she's developing because of the elevated male hormone levels will melt away. The hirsutism, the hairiness of a woman gets because of the high testosterone level will melt away, really. And so it's a matter of getting right at the cause, but people are confused. Well, these women, they have hirsutism, hair on their face. They have high incidence of acne. They get more heart disease because of the high testosterone level causing lipids to be elevated. They have diabetes because they became so overweight they developed second type 2 diabetes. So it seems to appear in a confusing way, and clinicians write a million papers on this, but the scientists know it all comes from one phenomenon. These are women that have been born with too many eggs. That suppresses the pituitary, and that begins the whole process. So when you're not trying to get pregnant, go on cyclic birth control pills. And when you are trying to get pregnant, mini IVF. It's just so simple. The results are fantastic with this. We have lots of eggs, so we almost all these women can have success with mini IVF. And in fact, by treating them properly, we control their acne and we get their testosterone down and they reduce their risk of heart disease. We reduce their risk of cancer of the uterus later in life. And one thing that's very interesting to tell you about is, say they have very irregular cycles from their PCOS when they're younger. Guess what happens if you take out an ovary? We know this because we've been doing ovary transplantation for little girls with Turner's and transplanting an ovary from their sister. If the sister has PCOS, we take out one ovary, transplant it to her Turner sister, and they both become fertile. The donor who had too many eggs and his irregular cycles, she'll start having regular ovulatory cycles. And because we've reduced her number of eggs, so she's not inhibiting her pituitary gland anymore. Also, if you just get older, if you wait till you're 45, your cycles will become regular because you have less eggs. The number of eggs goes down. But it's not good for getting pregnant because at age 45, the eggs won't be as fertile. You'll have regular cycles. You'll be ovulating. You no longer have the PCOS. But still, the eggs that you're ovulating are really not very fertile because of their age.
What are some of the biggest myths women have been told about PCOS?
Well, I think that probably the biggest myth is, oh, you're pre-diabetic. You've got insulin resistance. We better put you on some diabetic-type drugs. And oh my gosh, and these drugs are not pleasant, actually. The metformin causes your glucose and potassium to go intracellular, so you get gastrointestinal symptoms that aren't very pleasant. And it's really not easy to tolerate that metformin. And it really doesn't do any good at all. It doesn't touch it in any way whatsoever. So that's one of the biggest myths. Put you on metformin because of your PCOS. But a lot of myths are that, well, it's just inconvenient having your regular cycles. Well, it's not just inconvenient because you have a higher risk of cancer of the uterus later in life in your 60s. If it's allowed to go unchecked when you're young, you have a higher risk of heart disease because of the elevated testosterone level, and you have a vicious cycle of obesity that you can't break because you have such an appetite. So the mismanagement of it, forgetting if they want to get pregnant, we can do that with mini IVF. But then after that, they should be managed, and it's very simple to manage, just to suppress them with birth control pills, and it can be cyclic. And then they have regular cycles, and they're no longer estrogen dominant cycles, and you've broken that vicious cycle where you're making too much testosterone, too much male hormone.
So many women hear about PCOS and immediately fear that they won't be able to get pregnant. Is that a justifiable fear?
Well, it's not justifiable, and it's the right question because it isn't. But you can understand why they have that fear, because clinicians are so confused about it, and they might try to stimulate them to ovulate with just a low dose of Clomid or letrozole, and they can't move the needle. It's impossible because there's so much suppression anyway. And if they do move the needle by giving them, say, a high dose of gonadotropin, then before you know it, they've got 30 follicles, and be very dangerous to allow them to get pregnant. And so many doctors are really puzzled by it. But if you really understand what is the cause of it's simple to treat, and the results are fantastic. I can't imagine not having a success using mini IVF for pregnancy with women that have PCOS. I love it. I love to see PCOS patients because that's our highest success rate.
That's amazing. You can hear the passion in your voice. It's contagious. I would love for you to explain to the audience what is actually happening inside the ovaries of someone with PCOS.
Okay. So what's happening is, let me explain how the ovary actually works. And I have an interesting, funny little aphorism. The ovary can be thought of as an advanced form of a testicle. Now I'm being humorous, but it's true. Because the major hormone that the ovary makes is actually male hormone, testosterone. But the ovary has this enzyme, aromatase, in it that converts the testosterone to the female hormone, estrogen. And that's very important to understand. So the ovary is really making testosterone, and that testosterone is converted to estrogen. So all women make a modest amount of testosterone, about one-tenth the amount that men make. And actually, men make a tiny amount of estrogen because even in men, some of their male hormone gets converted to estrogen, but in women, most of their male hormone gets converted to estrogen. So if you understand that, you realize that what happens if you don't ovulate, you've had an inadequate stimulation from pituitary gland of FSH and you're not ovulating. Well, you wind up really making more male hormone. That imbalance causes the male hormone to predominate. And it's a vicious cycle. The male hormone actually winds up inhibiting ovulation and hurting the egg quality. And so if you just understand that simple phenomenon, that progesterone cycles are very important for the uterine lining to become secretory, to soften up so that you get a good menstrual bleed and regularity. And all these hormones are interacting. And it's a very beautifully timed system, kind of like in an automobile that is at least a gas automobile. There's a beautiful timing. And the same thing is true in the ovary. It's gorgeous the way it's timed. But that timing depends upon when you menstruate, because the FSH, because the follicle dies at the end of 28 days, then that causes the FSH and the LH to go up from your pituitary gland, and they will recruit a follicle. And the follicle that gets the lead, the head start, of 1,000 follicles that month is the one that wins the race to ovulate because it keeps making estrogen and the estrogen inhibits the FSH from the pituitary gland. And so, with less FSH, the follicles that weren't sensitized initially die off. And of those 1,000 follicles that are recruited every month, there's one follicle, the follicle that got the head start, that's the one that wins. And all the other follicles sort of die off. But you can't have that beautifully organized feedback mechanism occur if you don't get that rapid rise of FSH in the first part of the cycle. And scientists have known this very well. Biochemists have known all this very well since the 50s and the 60s. Sittery was famous for this in the biochemistry department at Wash University. And Leon Spiroff was a great clinician in the 60s who wrote the most leading textbooks on infertility. And so they understood this. It was well described, and it's been totally forgotten now.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I went to see a doctor. She was at a women's clinic in the city that I live in, and I told her that I was having very irregular periods, and she told me that that was just part of getting older. And I walked out of there and I was very frustrated. And I'm going to be 42. And I didn't buy that. So there's so much misinformation going around in women's health right now that it's so confusing. And I like your method. I feel like it needs to be simplified so that we can understand it and then treat what's actually happening so that we can feel better. There's so many factors at play.
And you know, as you get older, if you had PCOS, getting older cures it. It doesn't make it worse, it cures it.
Interesting.
You
So how
go from irregular cycles to regular cycles. Yeah.
Okay. So why can women have a lot of eggs but still struggle to conceive?
Okay. So we're getting back to the major point about PCOS. If they have so many eggs, the nice thing about it is instead of having menopause at the average age of 51, they'll have menopause at the average age of 61 or even 65. They have more eggs. And you lose 1,000 eggs every month. And if you start out with more eggs, you're going to have a later menopause. That's kind of nice. That's a good thing. But the problem is that when the eggs are fertile and when you're younger, having too many eggs inhibits the pituitary gland. There's a secretion, not just of estrogen, but a secretion of other hormone factors that inhibit the pituitary's release of FSH. Everything is a feedback inhibition mechanism with endocrinology. And so you when you have a period, normally there's a huge rise in FSH. And that begins the recruitment of follicles for the next cycle. But with PCOS, you don't get that huge rise in FSH because all those eggs have been inhibiting the and then there's a hormone inhibin, and the huge amount of inhibin, actually it's called inhibin, inhibits the pituitary gland. And so you just don't recruit a dominant follicle, so you just go along without a regular, beautifully timed mechanism. Some people have regular cycles, but they ovulate late in the cycle and have a weak luteal phase. But most actually have irregular cycles because the whole timing mechanism is screwed up.
I see. Okay,
This was
interesting.
described by Leon Dr. Spiroff in his textbook in the 60s. So there is absolutely no reason for doctors to be so stupid about this, but it really, I hate to make such an overt statement, but I have to say there's just a lot of stupidity out there on this PCOS. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's okay. I like it. So you mentioned the prescription metformin earlier in the show. So it's often prescribed for PCOS. What is the reasoning behind that? And is it helping the root cause or is it just managing the symptoms?
Well, and it doesn't even manage the symptoms well, but it definitely doesn't go to the cause. What metformin does, that's something that you give to an early diabetic patient to try to avoid them having to deal with insulin. And it's a very old drug. And what it does is it causes glucose and potassium to go intracellular. And that's a way of trying to control very early type 2 diabetes. So going under the misconception, and it is a misconception, that PCOS is just an early version of pre-diabetes, totally wrong. But going under that misconception, you would try to treat that the way you would treat early diabetes. It doesn't really work because this isn't early diabetes. And the insulin resistance is only secondary to the obesity that occurs from the massively increased diet.
Okay. How effective is metformin?
So metformin actually has nasty effects because when the potassium goes intracellular, boy, it can make your gastrointestinal tract just miserable. So what happens is, it does the same thing insulin does, but insulin is really the power agent for it. Metformin is just a pill that, in a mild way, can get the glucose to go intracellular. When the glucose goes intracellular, it grabs potassium, and potassium goes intracellular with it. And so that's the way you try to avoid having to give a stronger drug like insulin to a adult onset diabetic. But for a PCOS patient, it's ridiculous. Now, one thing that's very interesting you might have heard about, there are many obese patients that are now going on the miracle drugs, GLP-1 drugs.
Yes. Oh, I'm hearing about that everywhere.
Yeah, and they really do work. It's quite amazing. They work most likely by just slowing down the GI tract so you get full faster, you don't get as hungry. And as these people with intractable obesity get thinner, very often their periods become more regular, and that can dramatically improve the PCOS symptoms, only because as there's a vicious cycle that as the PCOS causes you to be more hungry and to eat more and become obese, that extra obesity absorbs a huge amount of estrogen, and with that huge amount of estrogen it's constantly secreting, that also inhibits the pituitary gland. And so it's a vicious cycle. The obesity caused by it then makes it worse, and you wind up getting worse PCOS, and the obesity, of course, we know causes type 2 diabetes. So the GLP-1 drugs can really help a lot, and we recommend anybody with obesity go on that to try to get back down to a more reasonable weight.
Yeah, I've heard that the side effects are quite minimal. Definitely. And I have a lot of people that I know that are on it, and they're really comfortable. And the amount of weight that they're losing is just incredible. They feel amazing.
It's absolutely amazing. One thing I do recommend, though, when you go on GLP-1, is take a stool softener routinely, because it does slow your gastrointestinal tract down, and so you might be constipated otherwise. But otherwise, it's really quite remarkable the way it works. And there are jokes out there in all the magazines, the newspapers, that it cures everything. I don't think it cures everything, except obesity is probably the number one health problem in the modern world, at least in the world. In the developing wealthy world, obesity is the number one problem. So it has so many complications, diabetes and heart disease and strokes. And so if you can cure obesity, you can really solve a lot of medical problems.
Absolutely. Not to mention the mental health side of things. When people start looking better and feeling better, their mental health improves dramatically. Stress goes down. It cure. Maybe it does cure everything.
Doesn't cure everything, but it is quite remarkable how much better you feel when you lose the weight in every way. And these
Absolutely.
irregular periods begin to become regular. And some of these women, when they lose weight, before we can, we won't do IVF with them until they've lost some weight, and get into a safe lane. But the joke of it is, then they wind up getting pregnant before we can do IVF.
Wow. That's incredible.
So I
Absolutely
really
incredible.
recommend it very highly for anybody overweight to go on the GLP-1s, you know.
What are some misconceptions surrounding insulin resistance and fertility?
Well, the insulin, this is what I've been saying, the insulin resistance, which is basically diabetes type 2, is caused by massive overweight. And it's not specifically related to PCOS. It's not. PCOS can cause the overweight, and the overweight actually can cause the PCOS. It works both in both directions. And but so that's the insulin resistance. But the original origin of PCOS, which is too many eggs, does not cause insulin resistance.
So let's put your practice to the test here. If a woman walks into your office tomorrow struggling with infertility and PCOS, what does your approach look like?
Well, okay, so I think it's very simple. It's so easy to diagnose PCOS. You don't even have to do any tests. You can just figure it out by talking to the patient and looking at them. And I would put them first on birth control pills to suppress. They're going to have a lot of unovulated old eggs. They're going to have metabolic problems. And I just suppress everything with birth control pills for usually 30 days. And then when we stop that, we do very minimal stimulation, very, very low dose stimulation. And that's all we need. And And then we just do a mini IVF, and maybe we'll get 15 eggs. We're not going to get 40 eggs because we don't overstimulate them. But
Right.
nonetheless, to be safe, to make sure we don't have hyperstimulation syndrome, we trigger the ovulation with Lupron rather than HCG, and I'll explain that. HCG is an LH-like drug that can stimulate the developing follicle to ovulate, and it's used all the time for IVF or IUI. However, HCG is too powerful, and it's got a half-life of 7 days. It stays around for 9 or 10 days, and it can really, really make you sick. If you have a lot of eggs and cause you to ovulate them, all of them, it can cause hyperstimulation syndrome. Now, your own LH doesn't do that, your natural LH. So if we just give you a little shot of Lupron, your LH goes up over 12 hours. It's released from your pituitary gland, goes down, and that's it. It's done its job. It's matured your egg, so you're ready for IVF and ready to ovulate, but then it's gone. It doesn't continue to stimulate these follicles like HCG would. And so you don't wind up getting hyperstimulation syndrome if you, it's so safe if you trigger with Lupron instead of with HCG.
Interesting. How often do you see women losing hope unnecessarily?
We actually, we don't see it in that way. We really are happy to get patients that have failed elsewhere, unhappy with their previous clinic. We get them from all over the world. And we don't have to just be a commodity doing just local cases that are easy to treat. We let people know that we're willing to treat. We like to treat the most difficult cases. We see that every day. So the patients we see are a select group that aren't ready to give up hope. But
Right.
there are so many people we don't see that have gone through multiple cycles and poor information and treatment, and they do give up hope. And or there are some psychology support groups that say, well, you've got to learn to just live childless and enjoy living childless. But
Wow.
that doesn't ha what happens is, if you don't have a child when you're 60 years old, you get very depressed. I'm not saying that that's morally right, but that's just the way we're built. We just want to have children. We want to, it's our shot at eternity. And we all want to be eternal. And a child into the next generation is, it's just built into everyone, you know, that they want to have a child. It's all.
Legacy, leaving someone behind, that's part of you.
It's part of you. And so there's like a psychological counseling that says, oh, well, don't worry about it. Just learn to be comfortable being childless is terrible. This is terrible. Because we can get anyone pregnant. I don't care how difficult the case.
Are there some success stories that stand out to you that demonstrate why people should never give up?
Well, every day we have stories like that. So last week we saw a patient who had no sperm in the ejaculate, and the procedure for that is just to operate, and 80% of these men will have just a few sperm in the testes you've got to find. And we first developed that procedure called TESA back in the 90s. But I won't mention the name, but there is a prominent urologist who has promoted a different approach to it called microdissection. And so most urologists do that, and they dissect the whole testicle, and when they do that, they destroy the blood supply. And if they do it on both sides, these men become eunuchs. So this man had that done on one side, and they didn't even find sperm. So all he had was one testicle left. Well, you've got to be a little bit afraid to have anything done on the other testicle, but he wanted a child. So I could absolutely guarantee him we're not going to hurt his testicle. So we operated, and we always stay on the outside of the tubules, so we never damage any blood supply inside. And the tubules go like this. It's just like a gift that God gave to all of us, that if we just stay on the outside and there are any spermatogenic stem cells anywhere inside the testicle, there will be sperm on the outside. And we just grab those sperm without ever endangering anything. So we
Wow.
did that, and we got sperm, and that's kind of a wonderful story of someone who probably would have given up because he doesn't want to lose his other testicle. And
Yeah.
we have I would have to say a 62-year-old woman, many of them actually, who have given up, and they need donor eggs, of course, because they don't have any eggs left. And no one wants to take care of them. No one wants them to have a baby, but that desire to have a baby is still there, and their husband wants a baby. Well, we've seen many women like that are very healthy. They're marathon runners. Their lipid levels are very low. Their doctor gives them a complete bill of health, and they get their regular preventive medicine care, whether it's colonoscopies or breast exams and that sort of thing every year. And there's a real good chance they're going to make it to 100. I mean, most of us in the modern era have a good chance for that. So at
Yeah.
age 60, you're 60, why would you deny her the right to have a baby? I mean, look at me. I'm 84, and I ski very aggressively. I swim a mile every other day,
Amazing.
and I'm going to go cross country skiing this Christmas at the South Pole.
Okay.
And I'm 84, but that's what's happening nowadays. I have so many friends just like that, and it's just a, we're very blessed because of preventive medicine, modern preventive medicine, if we have access to it. And if you're unlucky and get pancreatic cancer or brain cancer, it's a different story. But the common causes of early death and early aging, they're controllable now. So, 62-year-old woman, I have several of them that I've got to write this up. I have several of them that have had babies and are very, very happy and still running marathons. So I have,
Amazing.
I could think of more stories, so many stories of people that gave up and we were able to get pregnant.
Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation today, and I like your no give up attitude. You seem so youthful, and you've got so much energy in you, and you're helping so many people, which I'm sure feeds that energy that you have vibrating out of you. It's contagious. Dr. Sherman, what do you want every woman struggling with PCOS and infertility? What do you wish they could hear today?
Well, what I wish for every woman with PCOS, whether you're obese or just normal weight or even skinny, there are skinny women with PCOS. I want them to know that, first place, it is a woman's health issue, so you shouldn't just neglect it, because otherwise you could get heart disease or cancer of the uterus later in life. But also, you want to have a baby, it's easy. You are the most favorable IVF case I can imagine, because you have lots of eggs. So don't hesitate to do that. Don't, and we'll do mini IVF because that's a lot safer. But I want to give all PCOS patients hope by letting them know, hope is not really a plan. That's an old expression. But this isn't false hope. This is the real thing. The plan is you can have a baby. Don't worry about everybody being confused about PCOS.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here today and for telling us some straight talk information about PCOS. I learned a lot, and I know the audience did too, and I really look forward to our next conversation. So thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure, and I always enjoy chatting with you.
Me too. So thank you to our audience for tuning in. If there's one thing I hope you take away from this conversation, it's that a diagnosis is information and not a life sentence. So whether it's PCOS, what matters most is that women have access to accurate information, effective treatment, and to the confidence to advocate for themselves. So a huge thank you to Dr. Sherman Salver for helping us cut through the confusion and bringing clarity to the topic that impacts so many lives. And we will link his practice in the show notes so you can explore more of what he does and learn more about the amazing work that he's doing every single day to help women in the fertility section of life. Because, like he said, we all deserve to have children. So stay tuned for the next episode, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. Bye for now.